Healy, superstar. Do you think you're what they say you are? Ricky Lee, superstar. Do you think you're what they say you are?
It's showtime with Ricky Lee. Thank you for joining me here on 101.5 Huntley Community Radio. You can always stream our shows, including past episodes, at huntleyradio.com. Long before I ever started talking into a microphone on the radio, I got my start as an actor. And I still enjoy performing in film, television, and theater projects that spark my fancy. Recently, I was cast in the film The Slight from 54 Script Productions, and I could not be prouder of how it has turned out. Joining me now to discuss The Slight is writer-director Ben Kirsten and one of my very talented co-stars, Amy Stricker. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Now, hey, Ricky. Thanks for having us on.
Now, Ben, can you give the audience an idea of what is this film about? How would you describe it?
In terms of like a quick log line, it's a small-time magician is finishing up a show one night at a hotel bar. And as he leaves, he is invited up to the room of one of the women who was just watching his show. She ends up drugging him and handcuffing him. And he then spends the remainder of the film finding out why her and a few other women have decided to essentially kidnap him.
And would it be fair to say that this deals with people with extreme beliefs?
Yeah, you know, the themes of the film involve power, involve religion very generally. And so, you know, from that comes, but you know, both those themes involve a strong through line of what people believe.
Now, it's very interesting how different artists such as yourself deal with that kind of subject matter. I mean, if you think about Saturday Night Live, they deal with it with parody, whereas Hulu might approach it as a documentary or Netflix as a heavy drama. What was your approach with this film?
You know, the film, I modeled it a little bit after the way the Coen brothers make films, that if you were to read a Coen brothers script like Fargo or Burn After Reading, they're not funny. Just... in terms of the black and white, they're very serious. They're very horrifying and dramatic. Fargo, by all accounts, like the Coen brothers say, is not a comedy, but everyone else agrees, yes, it is. And so the characters and the way the story is written is they are all deadly serious about what's happening. And what is happening is scary and serious and not funny. But in that, there's still humor to be found, because whenever someone believes something so deeply or has a limited point of view of the world, they're going to say something or do something that to the rest of us would appear to be comical.
Now, in online, this is referred to as a thriller. What would you say is the thriller aspect of the film without giving away any of the secret twists and turns?
Yeah. So I described it as three things: comedy, horror, and thriller. Horror is a stretch. I know horror is a pretty broad genre, but I think thriller fits it better because the character Ron finds himself, you know, under the control of three people who, without being handcuffed and without being drugged, he might be able to like fight his way past, but he's in a very vulnerable position. And so there's not an excitement as in a thrill from that, but a thriller as in, if you can imagine yourself in this scenario, your heart would be racing, your mind would be going a mile a minute, trying to figure out how you're going to get out of this.
Now, Amy, you play the lead in this, and you are just such an incredible actress. It was such a joy to perform opposite you. When you saw this script, what was it that appealed to you about the character? What made you think, this is a character I want to play?
Well, first of all, thank you for the very generous compliment. It was really great getting to work opposite you as well, Ricky. As far as what drew me to the script, so like Ben said, it's a thriller. It's actually a dark comedy. You know, during pre-production, Ben and I discussed one of the main messages of the film, which is, it kind of poses to the audience, how far are you willing to go for your religion? And I feel like it's extremely relevant. you know, look at the things that people are believing these days. Look mm-hmm. at, you know, the conspiracies and the beliefs that people are holding that are influencing them to act and vote against their own interests. I think religious indoctrination is one of the main causes of most, if not all, of our political divides, you know, the hate, the prejudice, the acts of violence in the world. So although the way the slight goes about sharing this message is maybe a little bit unorthodox, the message to me is pretty loud and clear. You know, if your God told you to do the unimaginable, would you do it, and at what cost? So that's why I was drawn to the script and why I accepted the role of Catherine, because I just feel like this message is so extremely relevant and I wanted to play a part in its telling.
Now, in order to tell that message, you had to, as Ben said, play this character very seriously, even though there's this dark comedy element to it. How would you describe Catherine, her belief system? How would you describe her as a core person?
Absolutely. So this is actually the most challenging role I've ever played to date, because even though it is this dark comedy, for Catherine, this scenario is life or death. If she doesn't succeed in bringing, you know, Ron back with her, she'll be excommunicated from her group. So the pressure's on, stakes are high, emotions are high. And, you know, it was embodying a character who's extremely rigid, physically rigid, emotionally rigid, spiritually rigid. So it was a huge challenge because it's very different from who I am. I hope that answers that question.
Yes, you know, it's actually a very, very good answer in that, you know, as you're describing this character, very rigid, very, and you did such an admirable job presenting that. I mean, it's very authentic. And I'm thinking in my head, but that's not Amy. And, you know, I, you're so warm and giving and giving as a performer and warm as a person, you know, that, yes, you did such a convincing job. And that all goes back to talent. Now, Ben, Amy had mentioned the pre-production process with this film, and the script evolved from the first draft to what was actually shot. What is that process like? What is it like seeing your baby kind of morph and grow into something a little different than you had thought in the beginning?
So
not your actual baby.
Yes, not my 5 month old. So, you know, film, just like I'm sure theater or painting or any other art, is coming to terms with nothing will ever be how it is in your head.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm really proud of all the films that I've written and shot, or this one that I directed, that they come shockingly close to what I intended. You know, a big part of that is getting the right actors, getting the right art department, shooting it in a way that, you know, matches what you have in your head. From the first draft to the shooting script, it's 90% the same. I, to a lot of my colleagues' dismay, will say I don't like to do rewrites, or I don't like to write rough drafts. I don't mind rewrites, I like to write what I intend to finish with. And so like my feature film, I wrote in about two and a half weeks, and it's 90 to 95% what we ended up shooting with slight rewrites. Yellow Polka Dot before this one, same thing. And this one, yeah, barely any changes. Just because I intended to write something and I wrote exactly that. And perhaps that's actually a weakness and not a strength, because perhaps I should do more rewrites. I am proud of where all my scripts have ended up. But I do know that I'm stubborn in saying this is what I wanted to tell. So yeah, to circle back to your question, it's always nerve-wracking, but also there's a fair amount of elation in starting off that first sentence and then the film being finished and seeing how much it actually resembles what you intended to do.
Now, in terms of having the finished product match your initial vision, you also were the editor on this film. I think that that probably plays a considerable factor in making sure that that vision follows through. Would you elaborate on that?
So it's said that films are written three times, once by the screenwriter, a second time by the actors and director on set, and a third time, and perhaps the most important, by the editor. Because you can completely change everything about a film in terms of the way you edit it. The obvious example that's often used is the end of The Graduate. They break up the wedding, spoiler alert. He runs in, he gets the girl, they run out, they get on a bus, and they're smiling and they're out of breath. And then the director didn't call cut for, 10 or 15 seconds after he usually had. So the actors stopped smiling and started looking around and looked kind of bored. And that's the edit that they used. And so it went from a happy ending to a very sad ending as they realized that they've made a huge mistake. That maybe she should have got married to the other guy, that maybe our main character didn't actually want this woman. He just was jealous or whatever his problem was. But that's one edit to completely change the message of a film, where the slate has, I don't know, a couple hundred edits in it. And so each edit point is telling part of the story. Do you cut to this character? Do you cut to that character? You do hold on a shot longer. There are shots that one actually of you, Ricky, that I reversed. So then you are lifting your head up instead of putting your head down. And
Nice.
it's when all of the female characters are screaming and jumping around. And so by adding in a shot that didn't exist, I created it, by reversing the speed. You lift your head and you look at them and you look so annoyed with what they're doing. And so it sort of lets the air out of that balloon a little bit in terms of that moment, because by this point, you're scared of what these women are capable of, but then you also hopefully laugh at that point, because then one of our leads is just like rolling his eyes practically at the behavior of these other people. And so yeah, as the writer and director, I then also got to rewrite the film a third time by also serving as editor.
You're listening to It's Showtime with Ricky Lee on 101.5 Huntley Community Radio. Feel free to go to huntleyradio.com and stream past episodes anytime you're in the mood to be entertained. Today, I'm joined by writer-director Ben Kirsten and actress Amy Stricker from the thriller The Slight. Now, Amy, you had had the chance to work with Ben previously on the short film Yellow Polka Dot, which is now an award winner, I understand. And so you had that experience with Ben before. How would you describe between that experience and this experience, how would you describe it is to work with Ben as a director?
So this was actually the third time I got to work with Ben. Ben and I met on set for an indie TV show where he was the DP. That's director of photography or cinematographer. And actually on The Yellow Polka Dot, he was also the DP. So this was my first time working with Ben as a director, but my third time working with Ben in general. Ben is lovely. He has this really calm, grounded energy about him. And even if he's not feeling that way, that's the way that he presents to the world and the room. For the slight, he actually included me on the other side of the camera, and I was kind of his assistant, not assistant director. That's a different position. But his assistant in that he wanted me to my best ability, to be like kind of a go-between person between him and the other actors on set, since I kind of speak the actor lingo a little bit. And he was very, he involved me in the process. I can't think of the word right now. I'm sorry, I'm blanking. But he was very communicative and patient, even though he was dealing with a little migraine on set for one of the days.
See, I didn't
And
even know that, Ben. So Amy and
see?
Ben did a good job hiding that from the cast.
Yeah, he totally kept his cool, but he involved me in a way that I felt like it was a very safe environment to work and to play. It's a great working relationship that I truly value.
Now, Ben, Amy had mentioned some of the other cast members, and I think that it's really an ensemble piece where every actor just added so much, and the small ensemble. Can we talk a little bit about the other actors, the actresses involved in the show? In the role of Rose, we had Isabel, and I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name. Is it Fugat?
I think it's Fugit.
Fugit. Tell us
Okay.
about what drew you to her as an actress to put in this film.
So when we put up a casting first, the character of Rose was supposed to be not an older woman, but someone probably in their like mid to late 30s. And sort of that hard nose, for lack of a better word, witch with a B. And sort of the mood killer in the room. And when we put up our casting, and we were taking tape, we saw a lot of people, hundreds of people, and Isabel sent in a tape that was heavy-lidded and breathy and insane and out of context. If you just saw the video on YouTube, you'd be like, oh, this person is seriously disturbed. And Isabel is a very sweet person and wonderful, and could play so many different types of roles. I would think, like, first and foremost, like very innocent girl next door sweetheart. And in that tape, I saw, yeah, a certain amount of insanity that I was like, that's great. And she was 10 plus years younger than what the role was calling for. But we keep our casting very, we cast a very wide net, that I'm open to a lot of different things in terms of how a character presents. And so I just, said that I think she's our Rose, and we reached out to her, and she was like, this is my first film gig. I'm so excited. And yeah, she brought her A game. Everyone brought their A game, but yeah, that's what attracted us to Isabel.
Now, the youngest of the characters is Eleanor. And we had Frida and Hugh in that role. Can you tell us what attracted you to Frida?
Frida, so the character Eleanor is supposed to be very innocent and kind of naive. And it's her first time like out in the regular real world, off of away from this cult that she's been in her whole life. And so we were looking for someone who could be both playing this very innocent, wounded, sad little bird, but then also in a moment drop that. And same about Frida. She sent in a tape that Tin Nguyen, the DP, and my producing partner in the company, we both just were like, we love her, and we spoke to her over Zoom because she was out in LA, and I was just really impressed with her and her range, and yeah, we found our Eleanor, and again, she's not who I first saw playing the role, but she won it fair and square bringing her A game just like Izzy and just like Amy
Now,
and just like you.
Amy, you had mentioned that you were kind of the go-between between the crew or the director and the cast. What was your approach in doing that? How did you make it so seamless? Because you made it work. How did you make that work?
Well, thank you. I think the way that I try to be that person in the best of my ability was to try and make the three of you feel as comfortable as possible. Especially the two younger ladies who are 10 years my junior, if not more. And especially with it being Isabel's very first on camera gig. I really just try to be the communicator, like the go-between, to explain things if on-camera lingo was being used that maybe they didn't know what that meant. And just I think my role was primarily played beforehand. I reached out to all of you, I hope I did. Oh goodness, now I'm wondering if I only reached out to the women. I think I reached out to all three of you, just to be like, hey, if you have any questions, concerns about anything at all, please do not hesitate to ask. There's no stupid questions. I'm here for you. Please come to me with anything at all.
And now, Ben, you had mentioned Tin, who is your production partner, partner in your 54 script productions and was the DP on this movie. Describe your relationship with Tin and what he brings to the equation, because he's a very big part of all of these films.
Yeah, so I met Tin several years ago at a film meet and greet. As I was leaving, I went to hand him and another gentleman my card and ended up talking to him for like an extra half hour. It was during one of those polar vortexes. So the longer I didn't have to go outside in my car, the better. And he said, let's meet up for coffee or tacos, became our thing to go out and get tacos. We'd talk shop, and I'd bring him on gigs, he'd bring me on gigs. And when I wrote these 54 short scripts during the COVID quarantine of early 2020, him and I were talking about let's just start a company and let's start making these movies, cheaply, efficiently, but really high quality, because both of us had a lot of experience. I've been in the film industry for 18 years, and so we said let's start on this. And so both him and I are DPs, and neither of us were particularly interested in directing, but we made a deal that we would take turns DPing and take turns directing, take turns editing, take turns doing all of it. And so that's why the first one he directed and I shot, and then the second one he shot and I directed, and him and I make almost all the decisions together. We show each other cuts of the film as we edit it. We talk through color correction. We talk through art department, how we're going to shoot the films. But we also distinctly keep things separate where, Tim said for this film, he wanted to shoot the majority of it on this big zoom lens. And I'm not particularly fond of zoom lenses. I don't like working with them because they're not in the vocabulary that I use when shooting a film. And he said, what do you think? And I said, I love it. Let's do it. Because that's your decision as the DP. I'm not going to take that away from you in the same way that I wouldn't want him to take something away from me in how I want to make a choice. But we talked through all of it. And so if there was any reason that he or I would say, I really don't agree with that decision, we would talk it through. But we both really work very similarly and have very similar visions. And so far there hasn't ever been a moment of I don't want to do that. And so, we happily work together like a old married couple.
Now, we only have just a moment left, but what do you see as the future for The Slight? I believe it was made for the intention of film festivals. Is that still the target with this?
Yeah, the last one, Yellow Polka Dot, has gotten into 18 film festivals and won, yeah, three or four awards. We have just started to send The Slight out. So far, I've sent it out to 17 film festivals. But there's a lag. You send it out, and you might have to wait anywhere from a few months to better part of a year to find out if you got into a film festival. So for now, it's just sending it out to as many festivals as we can that we want to be in that fit what we are doing with the film, before we can, let everyone see it. And yeah, just working on the next two films, because or three films. We have one that's nearly done, and then another that's in pre-production for February, and then another one that's in pre-production for probably June or July.
Well, I will be excited to see all of those because I am a big fan of your work, both Yellow Polka Dot and The Slight. You've been listening to It's Showtime with Ricky Lee on 101.5 Huntley Community Radio. You can always stream current and past episodes at huntleyradio.com. It has been an absolute pleasure discussing the thriller The Slight with writer-director Ben Kurstin and star Amy Stricker. It's a great film that I hope you will get a chance to see. Thank you guys so much, and best of luck to you.
Thanks,
Thank you,
Ricky.
Ricky. You too.